here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, this afternoon, the view of our special guest, Mr. William Green, and we're going to be talking about something that, well, could impact upon my ministry and ministries all across America. But I'm going to let Mr. Green talk about that. Mr. Green, thank you so very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what this is all about?
Well, you know, back until about 1987, there was an FCC regulation that was enforced called the Fairness Doctrine. And this was a federal regulation that required broadcasters to basically to present both sides of any issue, especially controversial issues. And so the Federal Communications Commission enforced this regulation. It was never a law enacted by Congress. It was a regulation from the FCC. It was enforced from about 1949 to about 1987. So when this rule was in place, radio stations and TV stations could face very hefty fines if their stations aired controversial statements on any type of public affairs without providing equal time to opposing viewpoints. And so the result of having this fairness doctrine, this regulation in place, was basically self-censorship by broadcasters who avoided politics to escape any potential government retaliation. And so what we had was, when this rule was dropped under the Reagan administration in 1987, it really led directly to the rise of talk radio. It's talk radio that has enabled average citizens to have their voices heard across America. Well, what's happening now is the liberals that and the liberal Democrats that have taken over in the U.S. House of Representatives and in the U.S. Senate, in conjunction with a few Republicans that have started teaming up with them, want to bring back this fairness doctrine, which would basically kill talk radio as we know it today. And so what we're doing here at RightMarch.com is trying to sound the alarm, and others are doing so as well, that they are trying to basically kill talk radio, kill the free speech that is heard today on shows like this one. And so we're trying to spread that alarm, let people know, and we've set up ways where people can contact their congressmen, contact their senators, and let them know that we do not want the fairness doctrine brought back again.
Well, of course, they would have to just shut it down, ABC, CBS, and NBC, because all of these programs are certainly biased. They're not presenting both sides. And I can remember when the Fairness Doctrine was in force and writing to a local station about a program they put on about the United Nations, and they denied that they'd ever had a program there. They, oh, my goodness, we looked at our log, and there was no program there in the United Nations. Sorry, we can't, you know, and they simply lied about it, so.
Well, and in fact, the what's interesting about the Fairness Doctrine is that it really, they have set it up so that it doesn't apply to news. And therefore, any of the mainstream media outlets and the news shows and so forth that we know are very obviously biased in one direction, they won't even be covered under the Fairness Doctrine, so they can continue to put their one-sided stuff out there and...
Now, now, you can bring Berkey purification power anywhere with the Sport Berkey filtration bottle. Ideal for sporting games, camping or boating, or Sport Berkey is small enough to store in your glove box, so it's ideal backup for unexpected emergencies like blackouts, floods, or earthquakes. It's simply the best personal water filtration system available. So effective you can drink raw, untreated water from lakes, rivers, and streams. Unlike other sport bottles, the Sport Berkey's patented filter formulation is so powerful it removes cysts, parasites, harmful bacteria, and chemicals like herbicides and pesticides. It even reduces radon 222, lead, and other heavy metals. This lightweight, rugged 22-ounce filter is small enough to go everywhere, so take one to work and keep another in your glove box for emergencies. Get the Berkey Sport for only $39. Get two for $70 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Order your Berkey Sport today. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, rocket trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
The Healing Formula is an all-natural wound care formula developed mainly for the treatment of pressure sores, also called bed sores. The Healing Formula was developed by a home caregiver with over 30 years' experience. We use the finest ingredients available, including organic aloe vera gel and 35% hydrogen peroxide. The Healing Formula works from the inside out, oxygenating the affected area, stopping the spread of infection, decreasing pain, while promoting healing. The Healing Formula has also proved effective in other areas, such as abrasions, cuts, burns, and rashes. There are over 6,000 peer-published documents on the ingredients in this healing bed sore formula, with not one adverse reaction reported when used properly. The Healing Formula comes with an unconditional money-back guarantee if you are not completely satisfied. We offer a free sample to all nursing homes, home caregivers, nurses, and anyone with a non-healing wound. Please visit our website at healingformula.com or call 800-357-2944. That's 800-357-2944.
Well, Dr. Stan here, and we're certainly moving towards a point where they're going to be requiring, we're going to have to have a number, and we're not going to be able to buy or sell, and it sounds to me like that has to do with economics, but be that as it may, we have with us Mr. William Green, and of course, he's talking about the return of the Fairness Doctrine. Well, how far along is this? Has the legislation been presented yet, William? Should I call you William or Bill or what?
William's fine. Yes. In fact, Representative Maurice Hinchey, who is a congressman, Democrat congressman out of New York, said he is going to propose legislation that he's proposed several times in the past, but of course the Republicans were in charge in the past and the legislation didn't go anywhere. Well, now the Democrats are in charge. And there's a good chance that this bill could move forward. You've got Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid both saying that they are interested in moving it forward. In particular, Representative Hinchey's bill is called the Media Ownership Reform Act, or MORA. And it's interesting what they've done here. They've been complaining for quite some time that there's not diversity in ownership of radio and television stations in local markets, that there's conglomerates that own high percentages of market share in different local markets. And so what they're trying to do is pass legislation that will restrict what percentage of local markets these corporations can own. Well, what they have done is, in that legislation, they have brought in the fairness doctrine and included it. They have coupled the fairness doctrine with the media ownership issue so that they can get the fairness doctrine passed as part of something that they think people will say, oh, yeah, fairness and media ownership. Well, we all want to make sure that it's all fair, and so let's all get behind this. The fairness doctrine itself is probably the most misnamed and inappropriately named doctrine that there's ever been. When it was in existence from 1949 to 1987, it was unfair in inhibiting broadcasters and callers' free speech rights.
Well, I think what we ought to do then is start referring to it as the unfairness doctrine.
We could do that, or we could refer to it as the censorship doctrine,
because
that's basically what you will end up with. It's interesting because it's not government officially censoring speech. It is government saying, well, if you're going to have this side of an issue, you are required to have an equal amount of time to the other side or sides of that issue. Well, what happens is station managers and station owners and so forth, just like they did back then, they say, well, my airtime is valuable. I'm not going to just give it away like that. And so what they do is they stifle the speech on their own stations and say, we're not going to have anything controversial. We're not going to have any issues. And that's the reason you didn't have talk radio before the Fairness Doctrine was repealed. And it's the reason that when the Fairness Doctrine was repealed, talk radio exploded. Rush Limbaugh came about at that point, and you see now the hundreds, if not thousands, of talk radio shows that have promulgated nationwide since the Fairness Doctrine was repealed.
Well, you know, Chris, the thing is that I really think that what we need to do is get the word out and get the people contacting their congressmen when we hear that this thing is going to get into committee. So I hope you're going to be right on top of that and be watching this legislation. And I think that the fine, we need a slogan, you know, like the amnesty bill. That was a great slogan for the Immigration Act because, of course, what it did was everybody's against amnesty. By calling it the amnesty bill, why, of course, it helped to defeat it. And I think your phrase, the censorship doctrine, I think that's a great phrase.
Well,
and nobody wants censorship.
I think it's one that could stick very easily because it really is. And we are, we have already, if you go to rightmarch.com, what we have set up there is a way for when people click on the Fairness Doctrine information, they can right there send a message directly to their congressmen and to their senators and let them know that, number one, they don't want the Fairness Doctrine bill passed because it would effectively silence the voice of free speech heard today on talk radio. But number two, also to support legislation that would make sure the Fairness Doctrine doesn't come back. And thankfully, we do have some legislation like that. We've got, in fact, Representative Mike Pence from Indiana has introduced the Broadcaster Freedom Act, which would prohibit the Fairness Doctrine from coming back and from being enforced. And so that's some specific legislation that we can actually promote instead.
Well, I think that sounds like a great idea, and Chris, Mike does a good job on most things, so I think that we need to just keep people abreast of what's happening, and then as this thing begins to move into committee, why try to get people to call? But it wouldn't be worthwhile calling right now, you know, until, or do you think it's worthwhile calling now, or should we wait until this thing begins to shape up? Right now, of course, you're letting people know that this is in the wings, waiting to come back, you know, like the Phoenix bird.
Well, it's a good idea to contact Congress right now, specifically to ask your congressman to co-sponsor the Broadcaster Freedom Act. Right now, they have Congressman Pence has 111 co-sponsors. They're all Republicans. We need to get more co-sponsors on there. We need to make sure that it's a bipartisan bill. Because, you know, it's interesting. Last week, Congressman Pence introduced an amendment to the Financial Services Appropriations Bill, which would prohibit any funding to the FCC for the enforcement of the Fairness Doctrine should the Fairness Doctrine be resurrected. But that's only a one-year moratorium on funding if they are able to get the Fairness Doctrine back. And so we really do need to have a more permanent bill, but he got 309 members of Congress to support that amendment to the appropriations bill. So it's our hope that people will contact their congressmen and their senators, ask them to help sponsor the Broadcaster Freedom Act so that this thing can be nipped in the bud. If the liberals see that there's this much opposition to the fairness doctrine, then we may be able to stop them before they even get the bill forward in committee.
Well, now, how can we actually see the Mike Pence's bill? And, you know, I can think it's important that we look at these pieces of legislation mm-hmm. that our listeners have a chance to look at them as well.
Well, in fact, we have it up on our website as well. If you go to rightmarch.com and simply click on Issues and Legislation, we have a copy of the Broadcaster Freedom Act there. And, you know, it's, the liberals aren't ashamed of what they're doing. If you go to Maurice Hinchey's website, he's got a copy of the Media Reform Act up, Media Ownership Reform Act, where he is trying to reintroduce the fairness doctrine. So, well, we do have it up on the site, the Broadcaster Freedom Act, so folks can go right there and take a look at that.
Well, of course, I am certainly opposed to major corporations owning three or four outlets in any one major community, because, of course, then they can influence thought there.
And what they're banking on is that people who feel that way will say, well, I do agree with that, and I'm in favor of fairness, so, hey, yeah, that's fine. Let's put this fairness doctrine back in there as well. They've coupled those two together so they can sort of ride the coattails of media ownership, and that's, I think that's the real danger we have of it actually getting through. And if it were to get through and get passed, and you would assume that President Bush would veto it, but you can't assume anything nowadays. We've seen this too much with different issues lately, where you really can't make those assumptions. You would assume that the Supreme Court would strike it down as unconstitutional, but for all those years from 1949 to 1987, the Supreme Court said it was constitutional. And so we have a new Supreme Court. Perhaps the new makeup will help with that, but you can't be sure of anything. So it's up to us, to we the people, to actually hold their feet to the fire. And sort of, in order for them to see the light, sometimes they need to feel the heat. And we need to make sure that heat is being applied as the people, the constituents, contacting our elected representatives.
Amen to that. Well, I certainly think it's an admirable thing that you're doing, drawing our attention to that. And that is rightmarch.com, where they can actually see the legislation.
Yes, if you just go to rightmarch.com, click on the Issues and Legislation, and we've got it listed there specifically as the Broadcaster Freedom Act. And the good thing about the Broadcaster Freedom Act is that it is specifically targeted at the Fairness Doctrine. What it will do is prohibit the FCC from prescribing any rules or regulations or policies that will reinstate this requirement that broadcasters present opposing viewpoints in controversial issues of public importance. And so the Broadcaster Freedom Act will also prevent the FCC or any future president from reinstating the fairness doctrine. So it ensures true freedom, it ensures true fairness that it'll remain on our radio airwaves. And so we really want to encourage our legislators to sign on as co-sponsors. The more co-sponsors that you get, the more likely it is that even the Democrat leadership will say, okay, well, we'll bring this bill to the floor for a vote. If it stays stuck at just over 100 co-sponsors, even though that's a lot of co-sponsors, it's not enough to get it to the floor for a vote.
Okay, fine. Well, I certainly encourage our listeners to look into this, because we want to be able to continue telling you the truth. Are there any other issues you'd like to bring to our people today?
Well, you were talking a little bit earlier about the amnesty bill. It's kind of interesting because at rightmarch.com we were very involved in, just as I'm sure you and so many other people were, in getting the word out about this amnesty bill. And we felt very elated that we were able to sort of kill the bill again. It's kind of like a zombie, though. It keeps rising from the dead, and we just keep having to kill it again. But we can't be too complacent about that, because I was watching the voting on C-SPAN 2, and immediately after it was announced that the cloture vote had failed, and so they were going to be tabling the amnesty bill again, Harry Reid got up there and said, it will be back. This bill will be brought back again. We have to be vigilant.
Well, you know, you wonder why the Democratic, senator is pushing George Bush's bill. But we'll be right back in a moment.
The Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Ted Anderson from Midas. March 3rd, 2008. Gold, 984, 30-ounce gold coins can be purchased for $1,012.15, $498.35 for half, $249.18 for quarter. That's $1,012.15, $498.35, and $249.18. The Chinese government has begun a campaign of economic threats against the U.S., hinting liquidation of its vast holdings of U.S. treasuries, responding to Washington's trade sanctions, forcing the Yuan Revolution. Communist Party bodies are warning that Beijing may use its 1.33 trillion reserves as a political weapon, causing bond yields to spike, hammering the U.S. housing market, and throwing the economy into a recession. Russia, Switzerland, and several other countries have reduced their holdings due to this threat. Economist Ambrose Evans Pritchard published the report, China Threat Nuclear Option of Dollar Sales. Call for the report today, 800-686-2237. The value of your hard-earned money is being lost in a global game of chess. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Are the ancient prophecies being fulfilled? Are we living in the end times? Why do the Muslim nations want to destroy Israel, and why is the United States selling sophisticated military weapons to Saudi Arabia and the other Muslim countries? Why is the incidence of UFO sightings increasing, and why is that important? Well, you'll find the answer to those and many other questions in Lynn Marzulli's exciting book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, because the book discusses the ancient prophecies and the supernatural force that's directing the course of world events today. You can purchase Lynn's book at www.spiraloflife.com. That's spiraloflife.com. And if you read Lynn's book, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. 1126, or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our special guest today is discussing what I think is some really very, very important issues, and certainly he's from the rightmarch.com, Mr. William Green, and Scoo, go on ahead, William.
Yes, well, we were just talking about some of the other issues that are that are getting fairly hot now. One of them is, you know, it's kind of funny. The liberals have been pushing hard about President Bush having not pardoned but commuted the sentence of Scooter Libby, who was, of course, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff. But you know what? No one's talking very much about is that there are a couple of Border Patrol agents that have been sitting in jail now since the beginning of the year that were unfairly accused and tried and found guilty, and are sitting in jail now for doing their job. We have been asking President Bush to pardon these border agent heroes since they were first tried and convicted. But what's interesting is that the difference between a convicted former chief of staff for Dick Cheney and a heroic Border Patrol agent is that the convicted former chief of staff is more likely to be granted favors from George W. Bush. Interestingly, the difference between a convicted murderer and a Border Patrol agent is that the convicted murderer spends less time in prison than these Border Patrol agents that were, again, unfairly accused and found guilty and are sitting in jail now. This was something that happened 2 years ago, and not a whole lot of people have paid a lot of attention to it, but they really need to, because you had these two Border Patrol agents, their names were Ramos and Compion, and they had spotted an illegal alien who had come across the border in his van near the Rio Grande, about 30 miles southeast of El Paso. So one of the agents, Ramos, gave chase while the other agent, Compion, circled around to head off this suspect. When the suspect jumped out of his van and ran south to the river, he was confronted by Compion, and Compion was thrown to the ground as these two men fought. Ramos said that when he arrived, he saw Compion on the ground, he chased the illegal alien to the river. That suspect suddenly turned around, pointing what looked like a gun at him. So Ramos fired at this fleeing suspect, didn't think he was hit, though, and then watched him run through the bush and jump into an awaiting van in Mexico and speed off. They went back to the guy's van on the American side and found nearly 800 pounds of marijuana worth about $1 million that he had abandoned at the river's edge then. Well, you would think that that's a job well done. This is what we pay the Border Patrol to do. That's not what happened, though. They had an investigator from the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General, which oversees the Border Patrol. This investigator tracked down the illegal alien, a guy named Aldrete Davila, in Mexico, where this guy was offered immunity in exchange for testifying against the Border Patrol agents. And so, as a result, a federal jury was convened and tried them and convicted these two agents of causing serious bodily injury, of assault with a deadly weapon, of discharge of a firearm in relation to a crime of violence, and they charged them with and found guilty of a civil rights violation. So they were convicted by a jury on 11 out of 12 counts and began their sentences of 12 months, 11 to 12 months in January.
Incredible. I thought it was much longer than 11 to 12 months, wasn't it? Now, weren't they sentenced to a much longer sentence than that?
Well, when you look at, it's interesting, when you look at how the murder sentences that are usually handed down.
12 years. Wasn't 11,
well,
12?
The plea agreements, they usually get down to about 11 or 12 months.
Yeah, but on this one, didn't they send to prison for 10 years or something?
Well, these two agents, no, they're in there for 11 to 12 months. But what's happening now is they're starting to be, the inmates in the prisons where they're being held are finding out that these were Border Patrol agents. And so now these guys' lives are in danger. And it is, it's simply outrage. When I said months, I did mean years. You're absolutely right. Yeah. 11 to 12 years.
Right.
Which, again, when you're convicted of murder, you're usually in there, the sentence you get is usually about 8 or 9 years, and you get out early. And so now these guys' lives are in danger because the prisoners are finding out that they were Border Patrol agents. Well, most of these prisoners, half of them are illegal aliens. And we're put in there by Border Patrol agents We've got to get President Bush to pardon these guys now, and that's another thing we're trying to do.
All right, well, I certainly admire that. But the thing is that we've certainly looked into those trials, and actually the prosecutor withheld evidence. Now, that
yes.
is a crime, and the prosecutor withheld evidence and used a testimony. Well, we'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras, and PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, and the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
This is Elizabeth Border, author of the two-book set, America Attacked and Chaos and Chemtrails. I wrote these books because I believe that every American should have the vital chemtrails research info. I was much heartened and encouraged when a radio listener recently wrote me, quote, "You are truly a great writer, so clear and powerful and thorough in your communication. You have the strength to forge ahead in the midst of darkness, and you also believe in the power of goodness and truth. I hope you listeners will order these crucial books. Send your check for $32 post-paid to Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. $32 to Radio Liberty, Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. Or call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our guest is William Green. Our telephone number, if you're out there in the audience, would be 1-800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. And William, do you want to get your web page out there again so people would know how to get in touch with you and tell us something else?
If they go to www.rightmarch.com, that's RIGHT march.com, then they can, in fact, they can sign up for our email list there and become a member of Right March for free. We now have about 1 million members nationwide, and so we are constantly, what we do is we are there to create activist opportunities for average patriotic Americans nationwide to take part in these things. We send out regular email alerts to people, probably 3 to 5 times a week. What we'll do is we'll say, here's an issue, and here's a way that you can take action on it. And it's as simple as just clicking to send a message directly to your congressman or senator. and you can be a grassroots activist in 2 or 3 minutes every day. And so, we using the power of the internet and the tools of the internet, we're able to really generate a lot of response on the issues that are so important today. We've seen around 5 million messages go through our website in the last 4 years, going to Congress and the Senate and the President. Including on things like we're talking about today, including our campaign to get President Bush, now that he has commuted Scooter Libby's sentence, to get him to pardon these two wrongly convicted Border Patrol agents.
Well, what sort of response have you had? Because it seems that he really, of course, went right along with this. His Justice Department went right along with this to send a message to the officers down there at the border. Don't try to stop the illegals from coming in, because very obviously he has a different agenda. He wanted to give them amnesty, and there have been instance after instance where the Justice Department, the Bush administration Justice Department, has gone after Border Patrol agents who are just trying to do their job.
Yeah, I'm incredibly disheartened and disappointed in the Bush administration, especially when it comes to issues like this. We have seen over and over again where they've done exactly what you're talking about. They are really not only not discouraging illegal immigration, they are actively encouraging illegal immigration. There's a lot of different reasons that can be put forth for that. I think, of course, a big part of it is you've got a lot of business interests that really want the cheap, almost slave labor that is available now, and then that puts Americans out of jobs and lowers the standard of living for everyone. I think it's unfortunate that this is what we're having to deal with. However, we are still the people. And as we saw with this amnesty bill, if we will band together and if we will make our voices heard in a really strong way, then we can have an effect on the process. These senators wanted to pass that amnesty bill. They desperately wanted to pass that bill. But because we were, as the people, we were so adamant, because we were informed by talk radio, we were informed by internet, websites and blogs and alternative media. Because of that information getting out there, we were able to say, no, we're not putting up with this, and to stop it, at least this time, to stop it in its tracks. That's what we have to keep doing, even when it comes to things like these two Border Patrol agents. These guys need to be pardoned a lot more than Scooter Libby needs to have his sentence commuted. Whether that was a travesty or an injustice or in itself, this is much more of an injustice in having these two Border Patrol agents still locked up there and really in danger of losing their lives, unless they're put in solitary confinement, in which case they're in danger of losing their sanity.
Right. Well, I thought that Ramos was, or either Ramos or Campos was in solitary confinement for his own protection.
Yes. In fact, you've got one of them that has, it was Ramos, that was badly assaulted by fellow inmates in his Mississippi prison. You had four inmates attacked him. They kicked him in the head. They kicked him in the side and the shoulders. They had steel-toed boots on in doing it. He had injuries from bleeding from the ear. He had a degree of paralysis that developed in his left arm, migraine headaches that developed. They had to put him in solitary confinement just so that he wouldn't be killed. And solitary confinement is supposed to be done as a punishment for good reason. It really does. It really can drive you crazy. Cool. And so that's what we're having to deal with. Not only did this administration choose the side of an illegal immigrant drug dealer over the agents who stopped him from smuggling a load of drugs into this country, now they fail to protect that agent while this case is on appeal. This has got to be corrected.
And, of course, the thing is that they do have some prisons, a lot of prisons, where, it's not very strict, where it's not too hard, where, they don't have maximum security. These fellas are not going to try to escape. I mean, they're law-abiding citizens. So why don't they put them there? It's very obvious that putting them into a place where they can be physically harmed and where their lives are in danger is a message to every Border Patrol officer: don't do the right thing, or you would end up like Ramos and Campion. And that is what's so frightening. I think George Bush had to be held responsible for the actions of his administration. The buck stops at the top. He's in charge, and he has seriously damaged the health of these patriotic men who are simply doing their job for their country. And I think that every American should be writing to the president. And certainly he should be barraged with all sorts of things, you know, letting him know how displeased we are with what he's doing. In fact, maybe we had, you know, they were able to get one of the television programs on, something called Jericho, by sending, you know, 10,000 tons of, or something like that, of peanuts to CBS. I wonder what we could send to the president to dramatize the fact that he has an obligation to protect people who are trying to protect America.
Well, I think it's a great question. Maybe we can send him. Everybody send him a spine or something, because right now he doesn't have one. I mean, this outrageous prosecution and sentences, it's like you said, it does nothing but tie the hands of the Border Patrol. It prevents the agency from securing America against a flood of illegal immigrants, of drugs, of counterfeit goods. And really, we have to face the fact, a flood of quite possibly terrorists.
Right.
And it puts the rights of illegal smugglers ahead of our homeland security. And it undermines the critical mission of better enforcing immigration laws. These two agents should not be made scapegoats for our government's enforcement failures. We really do need to step up the plate here, which is, again, at rightmarch.com. We've set it up so all you have to do is click on that action alert, and you can send a message immediately to President Bush to let him know how you feel about this. But does he read every one of them? No, he doesn't read, I think, any of the messages that come in, but he gets a tally of what's coming in on a regular basis. And if we let up on this, if we don't continue to send messages saying you must pardon these two agents, then he's going to think that he's been able to sit it out and let it go by, and we can't let that happen.
I think you're absolutely right, and we have to let him know that everybody is learning just what his character really is. So I would encourage our listeners then to go to rightmarch.com and get on your computer, look at the website, and send an email to the president, and keep doing it over and over and over and over again. If you besiege him with enough emails, he's going to begin to get the idea that he can't hide behind Dick Cheney's skirts. He's going to have to face his responsibility to stand up like a man and say to Dick Cheney, I'm going to do what's right rather than what you want me to do.
Well, he was more than willing to commute the prison sentence of Scooter Libby, who was convicted of obstruction of justice, convicted of false statements, convicted of perjury. Again, whether he was falsely convicted or not isn't even the issue that we're talking about. We're asking President Bush to do the right thing. If he's willing to commute that prison sentence, he should be issuing pardons for these two agents.
Yeah, but
he should at least consider allowing the agents to go free while their case is heard on appeal.
Well, Chris, we remember that, of course, that Scooter Libby was a good friend of Dick Cheney. In fact, many people feel that Scooter took the fall for Dick Cheney, who was the one who really released the information. Maybe Dick Cheney's really is orchestrating everything going on there, and maybe President Bush just sort of reads the scripts that Dick Cheney puts in front of him.
Maybe so. You know, it's hard to tell what's going on inside this White House anymore. When we elected Bush and Cheney, I think we thought we were getting a bill of goods that we ended up not being delivered. And I think a lot of people have had their eyes open to this. And I'm hoping that we're not going to get fooled again in this next election with somebody new coming down the pike.
Okay, well, you know, I think that it's really so important. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question, our telephone number is 1-800-259-5791. 1-800-259-5791. How do you feel about Ramis and Campion? How do you feel about a president who sends, you know, innocent men to prison and certainly pardons or commutes a sentence on some guy, the little guy is a friend of Dick Cheney's, worked for Dick Cheney, was actually part of the original project for the New American Century cabal that got us into the mess we are today. And you, if you don't believe that, go to their website, newamericansentry.org. That's newamericansentry.org. And look at the 1997 report they put out where they have their statement of principles. You'll find Scooter Libby there right along with John Bolton and Sidney Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Jeb Bush and Gary Bauer and all the usual suspects who established the foreign policy that's got us into the mess we are today in Afghanistan and Iraq. So, anyway, so are there any other really important issues you'd like to talk about, William?
We've got maybe one more, and that is an interesting thing that's happened, and in fact, it would affect could affect your show as well. We were talking about the fairness doctrine at the beginning, which would really affect talk radio. Well, at the same time, we have an issue with internet radio that could actually kill off a lot of internet radio that has sprung up. And I know that your show, like so many talk shows, is webcast over the internet. There's a lot of internet-only talk shows and radio shows and so forth that are out there. But one of the things that has happened has been the royalty rates for webcasters have been drastically increased by a recent ruling, and they're due to this due to effect I think on July 15th, which is retroactive to January 1st, 2006, and to where you're looking at increased royalty rates between 300% and 1,200% increase. That the Copyright Royalty Board, which oversees the sound recording royalties paid by internet radio services, increase these things. And so so what's happened here is not they have doubled what satellite radio pays. They've multiplied the royalties even further. Before this ruling was handed down, the vast majority of webcasters and a lot of conservative and especially Christian webcasters are in this group. They were barely making ends meet as internet radio advertising revenue is just now beginning to develop. Without a doubt, most internet radio services, including a lot of the services that are webcasting Christian music, that are webcasting sermons, that have music snippets between sermons or part of sermons or what have you, most of these services will go bankrupt and they will cease webcasting if Congress doesn't reverse this royalty rate. And so what one of the things that we're doing is to try to help save internet radio. There's a piece of legislation that's been introduced called the Internet Radio Equality Act that that we are trying to let people know about so that we don't lose internet radio when it's really just started to bloom. It's been introduced in the House side and the Senate side. It would nullify this March 2nd determination of the copyright royalty judges with respect to webcasting. But we only have until July 15th to get these bills passed. And so this is coming up very quickly. There was even a day of silence that thousands of webcasters observed about a week ago to show this is what's going to happen if this does not take place, if this bill isn't passed, if we don't stop what they're trying to do. And so we are sending out information asking people to contact their congressmen, contact their senators, and ask them to support the Internet Radio Equality Act, because it's something that where people, and I know that there you've got thousands of listeners listening to your show online. It could affect your show online. It could affect shows that are online only. Something that we need to get the word out about to help pass this Internet Radio Equality Act.
Well, right now I pay about $400 a year to play just a little snippet of America the Beautiful. Mm-hmm. That I had to get a special permission to do that. Never had to do this sort of thing before. I mean, you had to, because we already pay for a radio station for the right to broadcast radio. But, you know, because we had to take our own radio station off of the Internet, just for that very, very reason. But some of the programs I put out like this, I'm paying over a dollar a day just to play this little snippet of music that comes out of the very beginning of my program, America the Beautiful. So I certainly agree with you, and I think that all of these things are important. It almost seems like there's an organized, coordinated effort all across America to block the American people from hearing the truth and to interfere with regular talk radio and internet radio, and it's almost as if somebody doesn't want them to hear the truth.
Well, it's almost that way, and I think, in fact, I think that you could make a very good case that it is that, the case. You've got a lot of folks that have power that are seeing that if they allow the people's voice to continue to be heard and allow the information to get to the people through alternative media, that that power is going to be diminished on their part. And there's a lot of people, especially in Washington, D.C., that they're there because that power is there, and they want that power, and they don't want to give it up easily. And so you have things like the Fairness Doctrine being reintroduced. You have things like the incredible increase, the multiplication increase by 300 to 1,200% of Internet radio's royalty burden, that, again, to effectively silence both free speech and alternative media in general. When people ask me, well, why are you trying to talk about the Fairness Doctrine? That has to do with talk radio, and, you know, you're an Internet guy. You've got an online organization. Well, if talk radio is successfully gone after, then the Internet's next, and we're seeing that already with the attack on Internet radio. And so, again, we got to stop the Fairness Doctrine. We also have to get the Internet Radio Equality Act passed.
Amen to that. Well, look, thank you very much. It's been a fascinating hour. Our guest has been Mr. William Green, rightmarch.com. That's rightmarch.com. Hey, thanks so much. Look forward to getting you back on over the program. Bye-bye.
Some people... You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light Purifier for only $279. Call New Millennium 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Each night when you sleep, your body uses a time to restore itself so that you could wake up feeling renewed. But wouldn't it be nice to also wake up looking younger? Now there's Night Skin, a serum that goes on while you sleep to reduce age spots, reduce the appearance of wrinkles, and moisturize the skin. Night Skin was made by Dr. Arthur Perry, a board-certified cosmetic surgeon, as an alternative to some invasive surgeries. It has real ingredients that have been shown to reduce the signs of aging and fight natural sun damage, all while you get a good night's sleep. Try Night Skin today and see what it's like to wake up feeling renewed, both inside and out.
Try Night Skin risk-free by calling 1-800-457-9914. Night Skin is guaranteed to renew your skin overnight. Turning back the clock has never been this easy. Try Night Skin risk-free today. Dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
The Genesis Communication Network. This is the time when I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us across America, we do hope that many of you give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. That's the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and when you do that, you'll get our four best tapes of the month or CDs, and you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you're helping us do what we do. Of course, you can just subscribe to the newsletter, or you can actually go up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com and pull down the newsletters for nothing. You can pull down our radio programs, they're archived there for about 6 weeks, and MP3s are available. And then, of course, a lot of our videos are available on our website, on the video site you can link to. We hope that you want to get the videos from us so you can show them to others, but many of them we've actually posted there because we want you to get the information and help us to get the information out. And anything that we have actually produced, you have our permission to duplicate as long as you don't sell them, you know, just give them away while you do them with our blessing. Well, if you've not yet seen Sidney and my talk on The Forbidden Secret, you need to get that. It's a DVD. We think it's a great DVD and or video. It comes with a syllabus, and, of course, it'll take you into the secret that's been passed down through the centuries by the secret societies. It's basically the same secret that Rhonda Burns puts out in her book, sold 5 million copies now, but of course she's trying to get you involved with this effort to contact the beings from the other dimension, truly demonic beings who you can contact with a Ouija board or with certain tricks of meditation, and sometimes they'll answer your requests, but at the cost of your eternal soul. Understand, we're involved in the spiritual battle. There really are spiritual forces there. There are organizations that are in contact with these spirit beings, and they're the ones who really are directing this whole effort for the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. So that's my talk on the secret, pardon me, on the forbidden secret. We have a four-tape set or a four-CD set. What you need to have, that's called The Secret Behind the Secret. Certainly my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, Chris Pinto's great DVDs on the secret mysteries of America's beginning, and Riddles in Stone, that's the secret mysteries of America's beginning, and Riddles in Stone. Let me mention, we have a three pamphlet set, and it's titled The Occult Hierarchy. The Occult Hierarchy. It's a compilation of our newsletters. You need to understand that there really is an occult hierarchy. You can go to the website at lucistrust.com. That's lucistrust.com or org. I can't quite remember which it is. I guess maybe it's lucistrust.org. But, you know, understand that these people are in contact with the beings from the other dimension, which is what witchcraft and Satanism and all of these things are about. You want to get the book on satanic crimes put out by William Kennedy. I certainly you want to get our book, Program to Kill, or on Operation Monarch. We get a great new DVD on Operation Monarch. We've got a great book called Diary of a Devil Hunter, written by a former Satanist who, of course, is trying to get the information out. And he goes around talking to police forces across America about satanic crimes and the satanic covens that are out there all across America. And then the FBI sends out their expert who says, oh, there's nothing to it. Now, why do you think the FBI is doing that? Whose side are they on? Are they side of truth or are they on the side of the Satanists? Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium, 888-803.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not the illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, today they're going to be the views of Mr. Yuri Felstinsky, and he has his Ph.D., he's a native of Russia. He's come to the United States, and he's a Russian historian. He's taken numerous trips back to Russia, and of course he and his friend Mr. Litvinenko had written a book called Blowing Up Russia, and we've interviewed him in the past, but there are so many things going on today, because our relationship with Russia seems to be changing, and changing very rapidly. And the average American, I don't think, has any idea of the implications of what's happening in the Near East, in the Middle East, or in the relationships we have with the Soviet Union. But certainly Putin has put his bombers back on alert. The Cold War is beginning to loom, certainly between Russia and Europe. And now that America is, of course, going to be putting interceptors, anti-ballistic missiles, supposedly into Czechoslovakia and Poland to protect Europe from Iran, and the Russians don't believe that for one minute. Well, let's get Mr. Felstinsky's impression of what's going on. What's the greatest problem with Russia right now, Mr. Felstinsky?
Well, I think the greatest problem is that they are going to have elections in 2008, and I always have difficulty with this word elections in Russia now, because it is clear to everybody, it is well understood that there are not going to be elections in the real meaning of this word. The next president of Russia is going to be selected by a group of top KGB or FSB, as they call themselves now, officers, the Federal Security Bureau generals. They will select the next president of Russia, and then they will promote him to this position through official election process. But since the Russian government now controls all major TV channels and newspapers, there are not going to be any elections. Now, in order to have the general of the KGB as the next president of Russia, you have to create a particular political situation, a political crisis. If you look at history of Russian elections recently, they always had crisis, a major crisis, prior to elections. They had the First Chechen War, which was started in 1995, prior to elections of 1996. They had the Second Chechen War, which was started in 1999, prior to elections of 2000. 2004 was an exception because Putin actually was, running for the second term. But in 2008, they're going to have another crisis. And unless something else will happen inside Russia, they're definitely preparing themselves for the statement that Russia, again, is dealing with a kind of Cold War situation when it's surrounded by enemy states, when it has to fight for its survival. And that's what we are seeing now.
And so basically what you're saying is that the KGB is going to create the myth of an enemy to rally the people behind the government so the people will vote for a strong man in Russia to protect themselves from that a boogeyman of the external enemy. Would that be a fair assessment?
Oh, well, they were doing this since 1917 AD.
I know that's
what the Soviet government always was doing, making a statement that it's surrounded by enemy states.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Yuri Felstinsky, and he has written a book called Blowing Up Russia. He's been a guest on Radio Liberty before, but his opinions are very important. His book is very important because it goes into the background of, you remember, some years ago when there were 3 apartment buildings in Moscow that were blown up, and I think there were something like 300 people were killed, and of course it was really all staged by the KGB, so they could get people rallied behind the government and of course justify the Chechnya war, the war in Chechnya. You had to have an incident to get the Russian people to go to war with Chechnya. And of course Mr. Felstinsky had written a book along with his friend Viktor Litvinenko, who was also with the KGB. And of course Mr. Litvinenko was rewarded for that by being poisoned and killed with polonium at 220, I think it was. And, of course, this created an international incident, and that is still up in the air. But I think Mr. Felstinsky can speak with a certain amount of authority about this incident they created to justify the war. How could the KGB possibly justify killing 300 of their own people in an effort to get the Russian people behind the government and going to war?
Well, first of all, we are talking about taking power in a huge country, which is Russia. And Russia is a terribly corrupt country, as it is well known. But at the same time, it's a very rich country, especially now when prices for oil and gas are very high. In 2000, the Federal Security Bureau of Russia, the former KGB, conducted an operation. The goal of the operation was to promote the FSB man or officer to a position of president of Russia. Mr. Putin was in charge of the Russian Secret Service in 1999, and he was selected to be the next president of Russia. He was promoted to this position in 2000, and as soon as he became the president, he started to move to major political and government positions other officers from the Russian Secret Service. Unfortunately, this was all legal. There are no laws in Russia prohibiting this. Before people realized what was happening, all major positions in Russia were taken by FSB personnel. That's how they took power. Now, when we think about...
Please hold there for just a minute. I'm going to bring our other stations back on board. And well, this is Dr. Stan, and Yuri is our guest today. Yuri Felstinsky was saying that as soon as Putin came to power in the year 2000. And remember that Putin was the head of the FSB, which is really the old KGB. Now, it's been the tradition that the KGB always controlled the government, going all the way back to, well, shortly after Stalin died, with the exception of the period when Yeltsin was there. But, Putin comes from the intelligence service, and then once he got into power, he started putting other people from the intelligence services, the ruthless, brutal KGB, into key positions in his government, because, of course, with a government like they have in Russia, why, they can do whatever they want to, so go right ahead. Could you just describe what happened at that point then?
Well, and so if you think what kind of operation this is, you have to agree that this was a very serious operation. The goal of this operation was to take political and economic control over the whole country. And, you know, taking into account that doesn't really seem so unbelievable and difficult to believe to Russians. They do know that the government basically has no difficulties to kill them every time they need to kill them. So it's kind of an everyday situation in Russia.
Well, I remember when we were speaking before, you said something I will never forget. You said that, you know, of course, you go to Russia, you go to Moscow, St. Petersburg. I mean, these are beautiful cities and very modern, but you get an hour outside of the major cities, you are back in the 19th century. In other words, once you get outside the major cities, Russia is a very backward, undeveloped nation. Now, that's not the impression we get here in the United States. Oh, Russia. Russia, you know, has this tremendous industrial capacity and is building nuclear weapons and it's building intercontinental ballistic missiles and, you know, it's been able to develop its oil wells and its natural gas facilities and putting in all of these pipelines. So that now it, of course, is becoming an economic powerhouse. In fact, it has more in the way of reserves in the United States. But how could a backward nation as backward as Russia really is, do all of these things. It just is not feasible, nor is it logical.
Well, first of all, Russia is a huge country, and there are different parts of Russia. Now, when tourists go to Russia, they usually go to Moscow and St. Petersburg. That's what they see. Russia always was a very centralized empire. During the Soviet years, this was especially so, and that's why the Soviet Union collapsed. It simply could not exist as a centralized economy and as a centralized empire. Yeltsin knew this, and that's why he was trying to decentralize country, to give as much power to local officials and local governments as is possible, to decentralize the economy, to allow local businesses to invest money locally. This was the strategic idea behind all this move, that Russia will develop equally, not only in the center, not only in Moscow and St. Petersburg, but everywhere. When Putin became the president, he came back to the old idea of the centralized Soviet Union, well, small Soviet Union, which now we call Russian Federation. But the idea is the same, that they will have another empire which is centralized, which is commanded from Moscow, through Moscow. They took all power, local power, from local officials. They canceled many elections. Because of this, business people who were investing money locally because they had to have good relations with local governments moved to Moscow. Russia, again, is a corrupt country and a very bureaucratic country. For every permission and licenses and signatures, they need now to go to Moscow. So they live in Moscow, they spend money in Moscow, they do not depend on local governments, and for this reason they do not invest money locally. So Moscow and St. Petersburg are doing all right, and the rest of the country is suffering. That's what's happening. Well, and in today's world, as we know, you do not really have to be a superpower to have a nuclear weapon. We unfortunately are entering the century when probably every African nation could allow itself to have nuclear bomb very soon. So the question is not whether a country has enough capacity to kill somebody else and to blow up a nuclear bomb. The question is whether there is a toilet paper in a toilet outside Moscow, in a public restroom. And so far, there is no toilet paper. So when the toilet paper will be there, I guess we could name Russia as the superpower.
Well, anyway, of course, certainly we hear about how Russia has done such a tremendous job in drilling oil wells and drilling gas wells and building the pipeline, so that today they have over, I think, something like 440 billion dollars in reserves, actually more reserves than we have. How were they able possibly to do all that construction when they had such a poor country to begin with? Were they getting help from the West?
Well, first of all, the economy is now a global economy. We could ask the same question about Arab countries, which are oil-producing countries, which are doing fairly well. And this has nothing to do with general development or a culture. This is a very, indeed, primitive thing to do, to get oil from inside your land, to build a pipeline and to sell it. And you do it using foreign credits and foreign money. And again, Russia is doing quite well now because of high prices for oil and gas. But you do not have to think, of course, that those money are equally invested, equally, distributed, and that everybody gets an equal share, a fair share of those money. This is not so. Those money are entered in pockets of several companies or a group of individuals. And unfortunately, again, these individuals, all of them, belong to the ruling corporation which rules Russia now.
Now, what corporation really rules Russia now?
Well, this is a very simple question which now has a very simple answer. The name of this corporation is the FSB, the Federal Security Bureau.
All right, the old KGB then.
That's the old KGB. And again, this system, of course, was not created by KGB, I should say. It was created by Yeltsin in 96. When Yeltsin in 96 ran for the presidency, he had, you know, great problems to be reelected. He had basically no public support because of the war in Chechnya and because of terrible economic situation in Russia, because prices for oil and gas were very low in 96. So he had an agreement with major Russian oligarch, rich business people, who gave him money to organize his presidential campaign. And Yeltsin won, but for this he created this corporation of Russian oligarchs, who were ruling the country for 4 years.
And were they really the old KGB?
No, they were not. But KGB realized what should be done.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. All right, well, I guess is Yuri Feltsinsky. So basically, he was talking about there is a corporation that really rules Russia. And, of course, it really came forward during the time of Yeltsin, when Yeltsin was running for re-election. So where did these people get, all these billions of dollars? Once, of course, the Berlin Wall had come down, who are these billionaires who rule Russia?
Well, in 96, this were so-called Russian oligarchs, Russian tycoons, rich people. But unfortunately, with the elections of President Putin, they lost their power. They do have money, some of them. Some of them do not. As we know, Michael Khodorkovsky, who was one of the richest people of Russia and the chairman of the major oil-producing company, was put to prison, his company was destroyed. Mr. Berezovsky, another rich Russian businessman and major politician, was pushed out of the country and now lives in exile in London. Another Russian oligarch, Gusinsky, was also expelled from Russia. And the list of those oligarchs, by the way, who are slowly pushed out of the country by the government, is growing every day. So that's because Putin, who is the president, who has, a very, very great influence in Russia as the president and as the former FSB chairman, actually slowly takes all major companies from the hands of business people to the hands of FSB officers. And that's why all those people now are very rich. They are on the board of directors of major Russian corporations. Their member families are there as well. They officially hold major stocks in those corporations, and they are literally billionaires. And this is because of high prices for oil and gas. Whether this situation will change if those prices will go down, yes, they will. Whether this will bring to some great changes in Russia, yes, it will happen. I think it will happen comparatively soon. But at this particular point today, those people are fairly rich.
Well, now, do you see that, do you look forward to the fact that there may be another Cold War developing, that there may be increasing tension between Russia and the West, which has actually been financing Russia, providing a lot of the credits and money that have helped them to develop their oil and gas wells? But do you think, of course, this is a close relationship between the West and Russia is going to change, and Russia is going to become more hostile and belligerent to the West?
Well, the Russia is trying to become more hostile. The problem is that economy in a contemporary world lives its life and politics lives its life. And I think nothing in general will be changed in economic relations between Russia and other countries, because Russia is producing oil and gas and they need to sell it, as hard as other countries need to buy it. So this is a situation which is going to continue, and doesn't make any sense to produce oil if you do not sell it. Now, at the same time, all conflicts which Russia are creating are very artificial, and We even have difficulties to see them as real conflict. And look at all of them. They had...
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was simply asking our guest this for the day, Yuri Feltzinski, you know, if he thought that there would be more tension between Russia and the West. We would see a return of the Cold War, and so Mr. Feltzinski was saying that certainly economics have changed everything, that certainly, you know, that they want, of course, to be able to continue selling their oil and natural gas to the West, just as much as the West wants to buy that. And, of course, there's one thing of politics, and there's another thing of economics. So pick the story right up there.
Well, so the political conflicts which Russia has now are very artificial. They had Russian-Georgian conflicts over Georgian wine, Russian-Moldavian conflict over Moldavian wine. Russia was prohibiting importation of those wines into Russia. They had Russian-Polish conflict over Polish beef. They had Russian-Estonian conflict over Estonian monuments when Estonians wanted to dismantle some Soviet monuments which were built by the Soviet government when the Baltic states were occupied. Now they're sending Russian strategic bombers to Britain like every day. They're probably going to oppose United States from now on everywhere they could, in Iran, in Kosovo, in Europe, etc. But saying about all these conflicts, that they're artificial, we also have to remember that Russia is still a very weak country. It is much weaker than it was when the Soviet Union was in existence. It has a lot of problems, economic problems, political problems, social problems. They were doing badly in Chechnya. The situation in Russia is still not very actually stable. And I do not really think that Russia could afford itself to have a full-scale Cold War the way it was done by the Soviet Union. Russia is very different. Whether Putin wants to have Cold War or not, people are different. People are able to read. There is an internet which is not under government control. It is very, very difficult to bring Russia back to the old Soviet style of life.
Well, do you foresee that if there was a confrontation between the United States and Iran, that Russia would take Iran's side, or would they simply stay on the sidelines?
Well, I think they will take Iran's side in terms of propaganda. I'm quite sure that they're going to be neutral in real military economic situation. Russia has enough problems with Muslim population of Russia. I do not really think that it's in the interest of Russia to have, a neighbor in Iran as a nuclear power. I hope the Russian government will have enough brains to understand this, and I hope the Russian government will have enough brains not to, create additional difficulties to the United States. Indeed, we have to say that every time it comes to critical moment, the Russian government, after all blessings, actually doesn't do anything. At least that's how it was so far. We will see whether this will continue, but once again, I think the reality is that Russia is still very weak, and with the new president coming in 2008, they're probably going to be dealing with the redistribution of power, redistribution of economics in Russia, and I really hope that Russia will not go for a full-scale Cold War, simply because it is not able to do it anyway.
Well, of course, now we hear that that Russia has been selling Iran and presumably Syria, a great deal of weapons. Some of those weapons are really very effective weapons that could be used against American forces. Some of the very, very sophisticated and lethal weapons. Do you have any idea how much in the way of weapons and that Russia has sold to Iran and to Syria in recent months or years?
Well, first of all, we're talking about people who were working for KGB all their life. And these people who were working for KGB under the old Soviet regime are now in political control of Russia. Traditionally, they're anti-Western and anti-American. Traditionally, they were always involved in selling of weapons to questionable governments and countries which are, enemies of the United States. Aside from financial issue, which is always a factor, especially now. So that's why they're selling those weapons yesterday, they're selling them today, and they will continue to sell them tomorrow. I'm afraid, is the reality with which we are going to exist.
Hold that thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. I guess it's Yuri Felsinski, and we're talking about Russia. We're talking about Russia's relationship with Iran and the fact that Russia has been selling very sophisticated weapons to both Iran and presumably to Syria in preparation for what I fear is going to be a confrontation between the United States and Iran. And of course, let's hope and pray that we're wrong, but everything points in that direction, and it really doesn't matter how the American people feel. It really doesn't matter what the military wants. It doesn't matter certainly what Congress wants. There is an agenda, and let's hope and pray that it doesn't come about. But everything really looks as if it may. What are your thoughts? Do you want to hazard a guess as to whether there really will be at least a short-term war on Iran? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm trying to be a very peaceful person, and I'm trying, of course, not to think that wars are necessary. We do have a particular experience with a war with Iraq, and we should say that probably the war doesn't go the way everybody was expecting it, and I think at this point it's very questionable whether this war should be started again the way it was started. So I would try to do everything to avoid the war. And the major problem is, unfortunately, that in Europe, of course, we had a major war, which was the Second World War. And when Hitler was making threats to destroy other nations, people were thinking that he's bluffing. At the end, it became clear that he was not bluffing, and Europe had to start the war. We really hope that the Iranian government is bluffing. What if they're not? And unfortunately, the only way to give a professional answer this question is through looking into the intelligence information which is available to the American government, I'm sure, but it's not available to me, so I'm not in a position to make any serious professional conclusions whether we should or should not go into the war with Iran. I think the question is...
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was asking Yuri Felsinski whether or not he thought there would be a war between the United States and Iran. He said that there's no way really to tell one way or the other, especially since we don't have all of the intelligence that is available, and he was just concluding his remarks. So what would your parting thought be on that issue of whether or not there will be possibly a war between the United States and Iran?
Well,
and you don't have to answer that. I'm not trying to pin you down.
No, that's That is the problem. The problem is that there would be probably no answer between yes, no, you know, choice between yes and no. The problem is that we are entering the century when a nuclear threat or a possession of nuclear weapons by a particular government is going to be an issue. It's going to be an issue with Iran. It might be an issue with any other country within 20, 30, or 50 years. So this is going to be an issue. And the major question is, what do we do if we do know that another country is creating nuclear weapons? And we do know that several countries probably try to create it now. Countries like Pakistan, countries like Iran, I mean, and India. So the major question is whether we are going to use a military power to deal with the government every time the government is trying to create a nuclear weapon. And if the answer is yes, then I am afraid, or I think there is going to be a war between the United States and Iran. But if the answer is no, then probably there is not going to be a war with Iran, and we will take our chance to see and to hope that Iranian government will be smart enough not to create the bomb at the end. But that's the problem. You see, we are entering a situation which never existed before. We do not really have any experience in dealing with the government which is bluffing or not bluffing to use nuclear weapons, because unfortunately you never know whether this is a bluff or a real plan. And with all other weapons, usually countries had, you know, some time to react. I mean, a tank division needs time for mobilization, an airplane needs time, you know, to fly to another country. With nuclear weapons, it's very difficult because the time factor is actually almost non-existent. And this brings us to a new philosophical conception, how to deal with it. And honestly, I do not really know the answer, because if Hitler would develop nuclear weapons, we would know now that he would not bluff. Does the Iranian government bluff him? I have no idea.
All right, fine. Well, let's just, before we go on, I want to take a moment and let people know how to get a hold of a copy of the book you wrote on blowing up Russia. And, of course, it was written with Viktor Litvinenko, who was poisoned. Do you really think that he was poisoned because of the information in the book?
Well, I think, again, at this point, it is not a question of what I think. It is not a question of what we know. We do know that he was poisoned by a very rare radioactive material which is produced only in Russia. We do know that everything what's connected to radioactivity in Russia is under strict government control, and in today's Russia especially, it's under strict control of the Russian Secret Service. We do know that even if you get this material inside Russia, you would have a lot of troubles to smuggle it out of Russia unless you have clearance from the Russian Secret Service to do so. And when, in addition to everything, you have three FSB officers from Russia being involved in this poisoning, one of those officers is officially, you know, announced by the Scotland Yard as the officer who is suspected of being involved in this murder, Mr. Lugovoy. When you also see how the Russian government is involved in major cover-up, you know, on propagandistic level of this crime, there is no doubt that the Russian government and the Russian Secret Service is behind this murder. And everybody who spent at least some time to read about this killing and to analyze the situation would agree that the Russian government is behind.
And, of course, certainly there have been a number of journalists have been murdered over there. In fact, anybody, of course, is opposed
to government. Of course. And this is the major question probably as well. We think that the poisoning which was used for the first time in London, indeed it was not. We do know that probably at least several times it was used inside Russia. And we do also know that the British government has a lot of difficulties to establish what was used as a poisoning. And it was really a miracle, a scientific miracle, that they were able to understand that polonium-210 was used. So it's very possible that the Russian Secret Service or the Soviet Secret Service was using this poisoning before somewhere in the world. We just do not really know about this because we were not able to establish it.
And, of course, this is a government that thinks nothing at all about killing people, whether they be Russians or living in Russia, or, as Mr. Litvinenko had actually been, was a refugee, living in Great Britain. But when they're out to get you, they're going to kill you. And, of course, that's why the book is important. It's fascinating to read. It was written, of course, co-written by our guest today, Yuri Feltsinsky, and, of course, Viktor Litvinenko. And Viktor Litvinenko was he actually poisoned before the book was actually released?
No, the book was written in 2001. We started to write it in 2000. We finished the manuscript in 2001. And, it was published after Litvinenko was killed, of course, and became a bestseller. It's available in any major bookstores in the world, literally. By the end of this year, it's going to be published in 20 countries. It's available on internet, in Amazon.com, in English. Of course, it was published in Britain, in the United States, in Portugal, Brazil, Holland, Poland. It was published in Russian in Kiev. But the book is banned in Russia. The Russian government officially banned this book. This never happened before, by the way. This was the first time when the book was officially banned for distribution by the Russian government. And this is because we have a very solid case against the Russian Secret Service, because this is the only book so far written about the Russian Secret Service of contemporary Russia, covering the period between 91 and 99. And Litvinenko, of course, who was working for KGB all his life, was the only known defector from the contemporary Russian Secret Service, and who was telling us the stories and the history of the contemporary Russian Secret Service. There were several, of course, defectors who defected from the Soviet KGB, but not from the FSB, which was organized in the 90s after the collapse of the Soviet Union.
And so the book is really very important. It's called Blowing Up Russia, and you can get that at your local bookstore, and it will soon be available in soft cover. But it gives you an idea of the degree that these people will go to silence anyone as a descendant. Use Viktor Litvinenko as an example. If you want, of course, defect, if you want to talk publicly, you want to write a book, why, of course, you're going to die. And do you think that they frightened and intimidated a lot of people because of what happened to Viktor, who is your friend?
Well, first of all, Russia takes the second place after Iraq when you compare the amount of journalists killed in action. And being a journalist in Russia is a very dangerous profession. There were several major journalists killed in Russia. A well-known journalist and my friend, I should say, Anna Politkovskaya, was killed in October of 2006. This was just a month before Litvinenko was poisoned. So Russia is a very dangerous place for journalists to write, because the FSB, which controls the government now, tries to control everything and everybody. They're using money now as well, but if they're not able to buy or to control, they kill, because this is an organization of killers, and this has to be understood. They try to avoid killing. They try to use it as a last resort. But when they have no choice and when they feel that a person or an organization is a danger for their system or for their corporation, they kill. That's why they killed Litvinenko, because they could not control him or could not buy him. That's why they killed Politkovskaya, because they could not control her and could not buy her. That's why they destroyed Yukos and Khodorkovsky, because they could not control him or to buy him. He was too rich for them to buy. So that's the nature of their work. That's how they do it. If they're not able to control, they kill. That's why it's very dangerous when those people are in control of Russia. And that's why it's important to understand what's happening in Russia. It's not because we could influence them. Unfortunately, it is very difficult to influence Russia. But it is very important to understand what the Russia is, who is in charge, what's happening in Russia. Because when the events will, develop differently, and sooner or later something will happen in Russia. I'm quite sure that this regime which is created by Putin is not going to exist for very long. We have to know what was going on and what is going on in order to understand how to help the new Russia and Russian people.
But what can the Russian people do, after all, when you have the KGB, when you have a military, when you have a police force, any opposition, they'll take you off and whisk you away and get into a secret prison, or they'll kill you. There can be no opposition, especially when the people in the West, or people in Western government, seem so intent upon continuing to loan money and transferring technology to Russia. Do the Russian people have any hope? Certainly reading the writings of Solzhenitsyn, why, he certainly seemed to think that it was the West that was keeping the KGB and the communists in power. And, of course, there's some people who think that they're still doing that. Is there any truth to that? In other words, has Russia been largely influenced by grants of money and extensions of technology, transfers of technology from the West?
Well, what you are saying is correct, except that it was precisely what you could say about the Soviet Union as well. You see, the Soviet Union was very strong. The government had control over everything. Military, of course, was serving the government, and KGB was serving the government as well. Nevertheless, in August of 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed in a matter of 24 or 48 hours. And Russia is much weaker than the old Soviet Union. And once again, with all this bluffing which was going on, in Russia and from Russia, that Russia is becoming or became again a strong military power, that it's able to fly to strategic bombers, that it was using a new weapons, actually today they were using, as they were demonstrating the power of new vacuum bomb, etc. Russia is still a very, very weak country. Russia is not strong at all. And this system will collapse, I should say, the way the Soviet Union collapsed in August of 1991, because nothing actually is changed. The Soviet Union was a huge centralized empire, and the Russian Federation, which is built by Putin now and is going probably to continue to be built the same way by the next president, again at one point will become a very centralized small Russian Federation empire, which will collapse. It will not able to survive.
And what you're basically saying is that centralized planning really doesn't work then.
Well, it's not just central planning. Russia is still a multinational state. And the only way for a multinational state to exist is through the decentralization of power, through confederation, not through a centralized power when everything is concentrated in one city, especially when this is a huge country like Russia, and especially when this city is Moscow, which is far away from a lot of Russian districts and a lot of Russian republics. And this is not going to work. It's something which is so simple to understand if you, you know, if you're educated and if you have a particular philosophy. But for people like Putin, for people like the FSB officers, this is very difficult to understand, because for them the most important thing is to control. And the easiest way to control, they think, is through one central, when everything is centralized. And when all permissions are given in Moscow and through Moscow. That's why they're not able to understand this, because that's, you know, it goes against their nature, against all their instinct. They do not really care about Russia. They do not really know how to build. These are people who were never trained to build. They were trained to kill, to control, to suppress, because all of them were working for KGB all their lives. Now they're in control of the country, but they're not really good managers at all. They were never managers. They were never trained to build. They do not know how to build. And that's why they even do not have ideology, because they're from KGB, which is a particular organization, which particular goals under the particular government, which at that time was the Soviet government. So when you try to understand whether something is built in Russia, you see that nothing is built. They have surplus of money because they sell oil and gas for a lot of dollars. But that's as much as they have. There is nothing. Nothing was built during the last 8 years in Russia.
And so basically, this is why when we talked before to Yuri, he had mentioned that you get an hour outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg, you're still back in the 19th century. And that thought has really impressed me. I remember our first conversation, and I wanted, of course, to get that idea out again. All you hear about Russia, about its tremendous wealth, none of this means anything, because they can't be productive, because they have centralized planning. And, of course, there's little or no freedom. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up the program. Well, we have about 3 minutes before I have to let you go. What is the parting thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, first, I'm quite happy, although they were happy probably wrong under the circumstances that Litvinenko was killed, of course, that our book became a very important one, because when we wrote it in 2001, I should honestly say no one actually wanted to publish this book, because no one believed that Putin represents the KGB, the FSB, which is coming to power. 5 years later, in 2006, 2007, it is so clear to everybody, to literally everybody, that the FSB, the Russian Secret Service, took political and economic control over Russia, that, you know, the reader basically doesn't have any difficulties with the book. At the same time, I should say that the history of the Russian Secret Service became actually also the history of the Russian current government, which is very important, because all those people who are described in the book as FSB officers are now major political figures of the Russian Federation. And finally, I think that unfortunately in 2008 we are going to see the next president of Russia, who is going to be even worse than Putin, because Putin was promoted by the FSB, but also by Yeltsin, and he was loyal to two forces, the Russian business community and the Russian Secret Service. And the new president, unfortunately, is going to be selected by the Russian Secret Service, and for this reason he is going to be loyal just to the corporation of the Russian Secret Service officers.
And so you really think that Russia is going to be in more trouble after the new elections?
Yes, I think Russia is going to be more trouble after elections of 2008, but for the same reason I think that it's not going to continue for very long. This situation will not continue for very long, and for this reason I'm quite optimistic about the future.
And of course that you're optimistic because you think the whole thing's going to collapse.
Oh yes, because I already have the experience of the Soviet Union. You know, when I left Soviet Union in 78, we thought the Soviet Union will exist forever, and 13 years later, which is historically nothing, the Soviet Union was gone, and I'm a historian. I measure, you know, trying to measure everything in certain amount of years, not in certain amount of days. So I think the situation will be changed quite quickly.
All right, well, our guest has been Sidney Yuri Peltsinsky, and he feels that the whole system is going to collapse over there in Russia not too long after the 2008 elections. I certainly hope and pray he's right. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. As always, it's a fascinating hour.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Mike, who's calling in locally. He has a local announcement. Mike, go right ahead and tell our listeners about the program. It's going to be this evening, put on by the 9/11 Commission. Where is that meeting?
At the Rio Theater, down on 1205 Soquel Avenue at 7 p.m. this evening. Only one showing until next year. This is Alex Jones's new version of the movie Terror Storm, revealing the history of government-sponsored terrorism. So join us for an educational evening and gain an understanding of the way our government uses war and terror to implement foreign and domestic policy.
And, of course, that's
so, for more information, please call 477-4556 or email santacruz911truth@yahoo.com.
And, of course, that's this evening at 7 o'clock at the Rio Theater. Of course, that's right where Seabright comes into Soquel. God bless. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, fine. Now, this is the time when I need to try to explain to the American people that there's so much that people really don't understand. That's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We go into the background of how Russia and the communist movement was financed from its inception from right here in the United States and our allies in the Brotherhood of Darkness throughout the world. If you want to know who finances the American Communist Party and the American movement, you need to get the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. That's Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we've kept in print for a decade or more. And, of course, you will find out that great American foundations have been financing the American Communist Party and movement. Why would they do that? Well, because nothing is as it appears to be. You need to get the books Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution by Professor Sutton. You need to get his book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and my video interview with Professor Sutton before he died, entitled The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. You need to get my interview with Norman Dodd, who is the Director of Research for the Reese Committee that studied the Great Foundations. And, of course, is available in our 4-CD or 4-tape set, The Secret Government. And, of course, you'll find out that the whole idea has always been to build up the Soviet Union. And then, of course, we put together a pamphlet. It consists of 4 newsletters. It's called the Capitalist Communist Conspiracy, and that's the term that was used by Solzhenitsyn when he actually talked to the United Auto Workers. I think it was 1975. We have the full text of that speech that he gave, but we've included a lot of it in our Capitalist Communist Alliance pamphlet, which is 3 or 4 newsletters. They're very, very economical, and you can get them either one or you can get them in bulk form, because you need to find out, you need to realize that from the very inception of communism, it has been financed by our government, by the people who come from the other side. And there really is another side. There are people who have no loyalty to America, who have used communism because we needed an enemy. And just as the KGB needed an enemy, of course, in Moscow, so they blew up the apartment houses and killed 300 Russians to get Russia into the war with Chechnya. So our leaders have done exactly the same thing. And both political parties are controlled by the same people. You need to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, but get the pamphlet, The Capitalist Communist Alliance. Find out who it was who financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. Have you ever wondered how a little country the size of the state of Mississippi was able to fight the United States, the greatest nation in the world, for 10 long years, and we lost the war? It didn't happen by accident. It never was a war. We never went there to win. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men.